Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Alan Buckley from the Irish Rock and Roll Museum Experience is with us in studio today to talk about the life and work of Gorillaz. How are you?
I am very well. I am listening to this. It's quite different from what we usually
do. Oh God,
isn't
it? Yeah. Big time, yeah.
So it is quite a departure, but at the same time, this is a musical collaboration. I'm even slow to call them a band.
Yeah.
That's been around for, you know, a couple of decades now.
Big time.
Yeah. So, you know, they are a major
force. Still going. Electric Picnic this year.
Recently played in Dublin and also announced for Electric Picnic. So, yes.
So, bring me back first of all. Tell me, who are they?
Well, that's a really good question, because the only constant member of Gorillaz musically is Damon Albarn, who, as we know, had a previous incarnation as the frontman in the Britpop sensation Blur, which we should cover as well at some point, because we definitely did Oasis. And as Father Damo said in Father Ted, you know, Oasis or Blur. There are Blur fans out there. And he had a really interesting upbringing. His father, Damon Albarn, was an artist by the name of Keith Albarn. And that, to me, really speaks to the genesis of this band. Because it's not just about the music, is it? It's also about the visual. Mm. It's a virtual band. I mean, that's the way to think of them.
Yeah.
There are four members, I can tell you. The 2D, we have Murdoch Nichols, Noodle, and Russell Hobbs on drums. So these are not real people.
Yeah.
2D is primarily Damon himself, and he will often do the vocals for that. But they are animations. So Damon meets a man called Jamie Hewlett. Now, listeners might remember Jamie from he's one of the creators of the comic strip Tank Girl, kind of graphic novel. It wasn't made into a very good film, but it does have a cult following. And if you know the artwork, it's very emblematic of what Gorillaz do. It's this kind of grimy animation that's a little bit dark and seedy, but comic as well. And Jamie breaks up with his girlfriend, moves in with Albarn in 1998, and the two of them sit on a couch and watch MTV and gradually go mad together. They're literally watching MTV going, there's nothing here. There's no soul. It's like being in hell watching MTV. Now, this is their interpretation.
Yeah.
And so essentially, they say, look, all these bands are manufactured. Why don't we manufacture a band and actually take it into an interesting artistic direction? So the concept comes from both the music, which we can describe as, we'll get into that, but it's the music and the art.
So the first song we played,
Dirty Harry.
Mm. Yeah. So where does that fall in their releases?
Okay. So what we've done here is I've focused on their 2005 album, Demon Days. So Demon Days would be their second album. Now, one thing Gorillaz certainly weren't at the very start of their career was prolific. They release an album in 2001.
Yeah.
They follow it up 4 years later. And I think you have to wait another 5 years for the next one.
Yeah.
Rather interestingly, they're more prolific in the later end of their career. They're actually releasing more like an album every 2 years. There you have it, Dare.
Yeah.
Very simple title. When we talk about Gorillaz, when I say Damon Albarn is the only constant member, of course they have huge amounts of collaborations and guest artists. So this one features a man who was in Dublin not so very long ago, the reformed and touring Happy Mondays, Sean Ryder, who many people will know also from Celebrity Gogglebox. And might be surprised that he's still up and bopping around a stage. But he's a very, very popular figure in the music business. And Sean Ryder, of course, that movement of that Manchester sound, the Happy Mondays and all of that, very, very much a welcome addition to this album. So this is actually a huge hit. This
is that their most successful? Because for me, it's the one that I think I know best.
I think all of their albums were very successful. I mean, they are incredibly well thought of, but not just critically, but commercially as well. So this does stay at number one for quite a while in the UK.
Yeah.
Certainly, it's up there in their top three biggest hits.
How many number ones had they?
They've had, I think, four number ones. The first one, which kind of broke my heart not to include it today because it is from the first album, is the one Clint Eastwood, which I love.
Why didn't you include that one?
Well, because I'm kind of just doing this album. My world, my rules. Yeah. No. Just because, as I said, this is the album, I suppose, that really, I know I say this quite a lot, that really launched them. Yeah. The first one, I suppose, people were wondering, was this more of an experiment? Was it going to be a constant?
How did other artists react to the virtual kind of band members?
I think they were incredibly drawn to it. You will find a lot of people, as I said, they managed to pull in a lot of collaborations. Another one on this album is the great American hip-hop band De La Soul. And so the last time I saw Gorillaz, it was actually in Malahide Castle in 2018. Oh, it's a beautiful sunny night. It was just one of those perfect nights for a gig. And De La Soul actually supported them as well. So I think what Al Byrne has done is, it's not like he got on the phone and said, would anyone like to get in? I think the experiment has drawn people in.
Maybe, well, it's different.
And maybe from a general fatigue with image and always having to do it, this is a kind of an interesting outlet for artists.
Tell us about some of the other songs.
So that is Kids with Guns, and obviously it sounds like quite a disturbing title. But as with everything Gorillaz, it is partially, shall we say, tongue-in-cheek. It's wanting to say something, but it's doing it in a kind of comic strip way. The song is actually inspired by something quite dark in terms of that Damon Albarn had a young daughter who was in school, and one of her schoolmates one day showed up with a knife, not to attack people, but literally kind of brandished it and showed it around. And Albarn was so kind of disquieted by this that he's thought of this song in terms of kind of the brutalization, he said, of youth now and how they're exposed to so much darkness at such a young age, you know. And I know in the UK, and knife crime is a major issue. So the song is maybe slightly comic strip in its formulation, but at the same time, it does have something to say. And it was the last single released from this album. El Mañana.
I'm not familiar with that at all.
Yeah, it was actually released as a double A side with Kids with Guns, and so it was part of the final single. But it has this nice, as I said, it's sometimes their music is very dark and kind of, you know, has that grimy reality to it. It's what's known, if we're getting into the genre thing, trip hop, which is basically...
So they're not alternative music then, are they? What would you...
Well, if you look them up, they'll be put down as alternative rock, trip hop, electronica, bit of pop.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I mean, we're definitely in pop territory here. Because apart from everything else, I know this band primarily from Long Car Journeys. It's one of those go-to albums that myself and my wife like to play when we're driving down to West Cork or something like that. Because it's lovely and it's ambient, and you can sing along, and you can also kind of just, I don't want to say, but kind of let it drift into your brain a little bit as well. It doesn't take over.
How successful were they?
Like huge. Just, you know,
Are they?
Are they? Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm slightly disquieted because doing the research for this, I realised Damon Albarn will be 60 in 2 years. And that doesn't seem right to me. But because I always think of him as this fresh-faced Britpop guy with his floppy hair and all of that. And then I realize, oh yes, I was young in the 90s too. So let's not talk about that anymore. Yeah. But yeah, no, they have been around. They're an enduring force. Mm. And to some degree, and again, this sounds like some slightly trite thing to say, they're almost getting more interesting with age. You know, they're more prolific.
I think Electro Picnic is a kind of unique festival for them to do.
It is,
profile-wise.
And I think kind of perfect. Because they do span generations, yeah. I think. Because they, you know what, it's really hard to do in music. Stay cool.
Absolutely.
And they have stayed cool.
The final song you've picked.
Oh.
Feel Good.
My wife's favourite.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Well, she just thinks this is, I was talking to her earlier today about this before I came in, and I said, you know, about the high concept with the art and the virtual thing. And she said to me, yeah, but it's all about the tunes. Mm. And this is just a great tune.
Is this their most successful?
Yes.
It is.
It is actually their highest selling single, which I think is always a nice place to end, but not just because it is, you know, commercially the most successful, but I think it kind of exemplifies the band in their most festival ready mode. I mean, this is going to set them up at Electric Picnic, I can tell you.
Will you go to see them?
There's every chance, although, as I said, I'm kind of old and don't like sleeping
stop.
In tents.
No, EP's great. Do you know what the key to this is? Go up and down the one day.
There you go.
Go up and down Saturday.
See, I've done that before.
Yeah.
So I might do
that. That's when I know I'm really starting to age. Alan Buckley from the Rock and Roll Museum Experience. Thanks a million for taking us through the life and work of the Gorillaz. We'll leave you with Feel Good.
Windmill, windmill for the land, the forever hand in hand. Take it all out on your stride. It is taking falling down. Love forever, love is freedom.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.